Welcome to the Illumination Podcast with Nick and Kizma, bringing you ancient wisdom for modern day success so that you can sparkle just a little bit brighter each and every day. If what you hear speaks to your soul, go ahead and give us a rating and a review in iTunes. You can also find us on SoundCloud and Stitcher. And hey, if there's somebody in your life that you think would enjoy this podcast, go ahead and share it with them. Well, hey there, Nick. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. How was your week?
Busy week. Week in Vegas.
A week in Vegas.
Yeah, that was a little much for me, but also really, really productive. So.
Yeah, and I think it was a little much because we were not staying at a Broughton Hotel.
A Broughton Hotel would have been ultra nice, I can tell you that much.
I know, and that brings us to a very, very special guest we have on today, Mr. Larry Broughton, who's someone that we've been really wanting to get on the show for a long time, and we're just going to dive on in because I know so much is going to be revealed as we go forward. So, Larry, welcome to Illumination Podcast, and thank you so much for being here.
Well, thanks for having me on, you guys. I really appreciate it. It's hard for me to be on this call without seeing you guys, and every time I see you, either of you, I can't look directly at you. You guys are so sparkly. I'm afraid I'll burn my eyes.
Yeah, we're a little sparkly. We do what we can to stay sparkly. But, you know, we've seen you speak several times. We've been at conferences. And I know that there's we were just talking before we got on, we could talk for 5 days. I feel like you have lived so many lifetimes. And the reason that I feel like you'll really benefit our listeners is that you're such a leader. I know when we hear you speak, you talk about leadership, and you do it in a way that has this spiritual flavor, texture, and context. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like, I don't know, Nick, but I think we could start there and reverse engineer everything.
I think that sounds like a great idea.
Yeah. So Larry, if there's just how would you describe your philosophy, your belief, how you teach, and how you are as a leader?
Wow. Well, thanks for saying that, by the way, about the spirituality thing. Because, you know, honestly, I'm just on a journey and I don't have it all figured out yet. So I think that might be what you see. Because I think there are a lot of leaders out there who, when they get in front of people, they pretend they've got it all figured out.
Yes.
And we've probably been, you know, under the direction of leaders where you can just see that it's smoke and mirrors.
Right.
And that's not really, this word is way overused, but authentic.
Yes.
That's kind of a catchphrase, I think, today. I think it's a powerful word. I've been using it for a long time. But I think people are looking for authenticity. Mm-hmm. I think they were craving it. And so there's a lot of people who have fake authenticity.
And that's, right.
That might be a paradox, right?
Right.
But I think that's where it comes from. I'm just on a journey, and you kind of mentioned, you know, I've lived a lot of lifetimes. Well, I think the truth is I have. Mm-hmm. I think the truth is a lot of us have. Mm-hmm. I think that's a tough thing for us to get our brains around sometimes. Mm-hmm. But I can remember you guys were at an event that I was speaking at, and then we did kind of an impromptu Q&A at lunch.
Right, with probably Matthew that? Browning, I think.
I totally remember that.
It probably was. And I remember that people were asking me questions, and I love doing these kind of impromptu sessions because it sharpens my skills. But there are times, and that was one of them, when I remember, I don't even know where the hell this stuff is coming from. I'm just channeling this stuff. And I know it's not me.
Yeah.
I mean, it's me, but it's me from another lifetime. It's me channeling stuff through my creator, God. I call it God. And I just become a vessel sometimes, and it's powerful. And so I kind of use that as the way I lead. You know, I try to make it, and again, this is overused, but heart-centered, and share my vulnerabilities and my mistakes. And I think that I've learned that over the years, guys, through recognizing that so many people are living behind a mask out of fear. And the sooner we can get courageous and live a life of courage, then the more authentic and the more powerful leaders we become.
Well, I mean, that's beautiful. And one of the things that I'm noticing in that is that there seems to be a little bit of a dichotomy of being a strong leader and also being incredibly vulnerable is one word for it, but I think humble is really the word that's more, that really seems to speak more directly to that. Can you speak a little bit to that? Like, how do you address both of those? How do you have both?
Well, I think the dichotomy comes from that we've been sold a bill of goods. I think it is a bunch of malarkey. When we bought into Hollywood and, you know, novelist idea of what courage and strength is, that it's the lone wolf, you know, right. It's the take no prisoners. It's the command and control type of leader that is effective, when in truth, it's not. I mean, if we look at history and you look at the, and let's just be honest, I mean, a lot of my leadership and background has been formed by my time in the Green Berets, right. You know, where I spent 9 years. And so there is a misconception that these are folks who just go around kicking in doors every day. Mm. And yes, that is part of it. But I can tell you, no one loves deeper than a warrior. And I'm not just talking about a warrior who carries a weapon. I'm talking about just warriors in life, you know, because these are people who care more deeply about their family, their friends, their ideals, their beliefs, their country than they do about themselves sometimes. It takes love to do that. And so the dichotomy, I think, comes in that is that we've just been sold a bill of goods. But the truth is, it takes courage to do this stuff, you know. Give me a second here and I'll just tell you that, you know, it's courage that provides the wisdom to be humble that you mentioned about earlier, Nick. You know, it's with courage, you know, we dare to take risk, you know, and if we don't take risk, you know, risk is the key ingredient to success. I know a lot of people listen to you guys because they want to be more quote unquote successful, right? But it takes risk to do that. It's courage that helps us drive on in the face of lingering doubt and bad economic conditions and bad relationships, right? It's courage that sustains us on this journey towards our dreams and our visions, and it allows us to love more deeply and communicate more effectively. This is all stuff, courage, right? And integrity is based on courage. Mm. So I get, you know, we're so afraid that we're going to be judged or be labeled as weak, or, you know, if we're a man, that we're going to be labeled as effeminate. Or whatever it is, but crying out loud, I think as soon as somebody gets vulnerable, don't you feel a heart tug towards them?
Yeah.
Right?
It really, I just love what you said, that warrior's love more than ever. I mean, when we go back to our spiritual roots, it's like the Bhagavad Gita. It's the ultimate righteous war. And this is such a great representation, how you speak about the vulnerability, the authenticity, the love, which is the greatest harmonizer ever in terms of energy, and courage. You know, I think that is really something that people need to hear again and again. Like, it's okay to have someone think that you've got a little nutty, you know, or disagree with you or whatever. And that's usually a good sign, right? Like,
sure, when, of course.
When your friends or your family are like, what are you doing? That usually means that you're stepping into your truth, and you're beginning to really speak from a true voice. I love that.
Yeah, well, I think for me, I can just only personalize it and share what I've learned along the way. When I finally stepped into what you call, and a lot of people call, your truth, that's when I felt freedom. Early in my business career, I mean, I should probably give you a little bit of background. I barely graduated high school, you know. I've got a high IQ, as it turns out, but I didn't know that until I got into the military. It turns out I'm dyslexic, but I grew up thinking that I was stupid.
Oh,
you know?
My gosh. Wow.
And I had a counselor in high school who told me, was a sophomore, you go in and speak with your counselor and say, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I said, I want to be a veterinarian. And the counselor literally chuckled and said, no, you're not smart enough to do that. But if you want to work with animals, you can join FFA, Future Farmers of America. And that just crushed me, you know? And so I went through the rest of high school thinking I was an idiot or stupid.
And how many people has that really happened to as well? I'm sure our listeners are resonating with that.
Over and over again. Yeah. I mean, this is somebody in authority, right? Mm-hmm. These people know, right? And it's not like I had this this group of cheerleaders in my home. I didn't, right? But so when I got into business, I mean, I always knew I had a inclination towards leadership. But when I got into business, instead of leaning into who I am or was, I started copying what everybody else was doing. I tried to mimic how people spoke and how they ran meetings. And it just felt so creepy that there was a disconnect, right? And I started getting wound really tight. But it wasn't until I just realized that I have to just be me, that I felt freedom.
Right. Was there an instance where you were just like throwing it to the wind? This is, you know, this is BS. I'm just going to do what I'm here to do. Or did you find yourself mm-hmm. evolving into that?
I evolved into it mm-hmm. Over time, but it really, what caused me to evolve was actually a couple of significant crises mm-hmm. and frankly, a crash and burn where I scraped along bottom for a while, you know, where I realized my best efforts got me here and it's time for me to buck yeah. up. Right. And so this is why I just really encourage people that if you're having a painful period, there's good on the other side of it. If you're willing to be intellectually honest, mm-hmm. if you're willing to do the hard work and have some intelligent reflection, which takes courage, by the way.
Right.
But wisdom is what comes from doing and reflecting. You know, you can be smart, but not be wise. Right. Totally. So if you're having a painful period and you're willing to actually do the work, wisdom will come on the other side of that.
Mm, that is so perfect. I think that, you know, we, Nick and I talk a lot about how people tend to label things good or bad. And this mm-hmm. is something we certainly work on with our students and clients, because like you said, there could be this painful period and how quickly we go to being like, oh, this is really bad, or this mm-hmm. really bad thing happened. Yet we've not seen the occurrence of events that come to follow that sure. can actually catapult a human to a new evolution or take somebody to a different route, or just like you said, have more courage, more authenticity. So I love that. Like, and the wisdom piece is just spot on.
Well, I think that we have to look at these. Thank you, by the way. I think that when we look at these painful periods, it does take a little bit of our own brainwashing or just kind of redirecting the way we think about these mm-hmm. things. Because as you say, I think society has programmed us that if it's pain, then it's bad, but it's
exactly.
not.
Right.
It's opportunity. I mean, if you think about it, if you're going into the gym, mm-hmm. to work out and you're going to push weights, there's pain there, but you become mm-hmm. stronger on the other side. If you're an endurance runner, you go out and you push it until your lungs burn and it hurts.
Right.
But the next time you go out, you can run a little bit further. And I think it's the same thing that has to do with tenacity, same thing that has to do with stretching our spiritual muscle. We've got to go through this a little bit once in a while. And I'm not saying our whole lives we need to be kind of the self-flagellation and whipping. I'm not saying that. Right. But I don't think we should run from it.
Yeah.
I think we should lean into it.
Right. Right. And it seems like there is, when you give that analogy, it makes perfect sense. And anybody is like, yeah, of course, it's going to be a little painful when I go and start lifting those weights when I haven't done it in 6 months. Mm-hmm. But when it gets into the daily life, in building the business, or if you're going through a tough time in your marriage, I think or relationship or whatever that may be, it somehow a switch gets flipped where it just seems like totally different than that, and it's so easy to stop.
Sure.
I mean, have you seen that in sure. others, and like, what do you do to work around that?
Sure, we see it happen all the time. Okay.
So only always.
exactly. Only always. So what do we do? Well, it's like, you know, and I'm sorry, but I just have to relate back to my special forces days.
I love this. I mean, we want to know more about that, obviously. Yeah.
Well, you got to surround yourself with people who are bolder and brighter than you are.
That's so good.
Cheering helps. We have to have people who just cheer us on. Okay. And not cheer us on like over the cliff. This is why we have to have mentors and coaches mm-hmm. in our lives, someone who speaks wisdom into our lives, right? And the best mentors are wise. I yeah. believe that we need to surround ourselves with wise sages and young Turks, right? Wise sages will guide our paths, and the young Turks will, you know, inspire, I mean, push us towards innovation and, yeah. and change yeah. and thinking about things a little bit differently. But too often we surround ourselves with people who are just like me, mm-hmm. mini me's, mm-hmm. right? And so we get stuck. And this is what drives me nuts about the political process that we're in right now, mm-hmm. that we can't have animated debate and civil at the same time. It just degenerates down to garbage.
Mm-hmm.
And it's I'm right and you're wrong. Well, guess what?
I like that. I know. Yeah, I totally agree with that.
So
yeah.
Business is the same way. I think that if we surround ourselves with mentors, multiple mentors, and people who are bolder and brighter than we are, like through masterminds or board of advisors or whatever, and we bounce ideas off of them and pretend, instead of pretending that we've got it all figured out, Nick, then I think that it's easier to navigate these landmines that come up in life.
Yeah, I appreciate that. That makes so much sense. Can you speak to one of your most influential mentors and maybe a little bit about what he or she might have meant to you?
You know, so I've been blessed to have some great mentors in the last few years of my life. But one of the reasons I really started mentoring people actively in recent years was because I didn't have mentors early on in my life. And so I floundered. But when I look back at my life, I realized that I can get pearls of wisdom and nuggets of learning from anybody. They don't have to be perfect people. Right. I mean, we can learn stuff from a variety of kooks and characters through history. Right. But that doesn't mean that they're perfect people. So that was one of the mistakes that I made early on in my life. I felt like I couldn't sit under this person's tutelage because they just didn't have everything together. But I learned about this stuff in martial arts at a young age, you know, because the black belt instructor is really a mentor. The scout master in Boy Scouts is really supposed to be a mentor. But then once I got into my 20s, I kind of didn't actively pursue mentors. And part of that was just because I was fearful and hiding and felt like if I really had a mentor, then I was going to have to share what was really going on in my life.
Yeah.
And truly a great mentor is someone that you can share your fears and your secrets. But the problem is there are people who exploit this mentor-mentee relationship. And I don't want to go down that dark path, but we can, you know, there's plenty of examples of that, right?
Yeah, there are too many examples of that. I agree.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And they usually come across as, look what my students and clients have done to promote how great they are as a mentor. Yeah. And that's just pretty much the first where you're just like, okay, you know, next.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, if you're aware.
Right.
But too many of us aren't. Too many of us go through life blind and we follow. I think I got way off track on that. So I'm sorry.
That's good. Somebody's
got to bring me back.
No, that was it. That was a really great answer. I so appreciate it. Can you think of anybody in particular that just meant the world to you?
Yeah. So there's a guy named Greg Leith, who is just a powerful leader, spiritual guide for me, great business person. Great relationship with his bride. And he just invested in me for no other reason except that he loved me. And I thought that was pretty powerful. And I can call on him any time of the day or night. And he was there. A guy named Daryl Fasaro, who's got a great radio show on Unity Radio called The Funniest Thing with Daryl and Ed. And Daryl was able to show me the importance of humor. In my life and laughter and not getting kind of stuck and wrapped around the axle on what everybody else thinks about me. Right. So those two men in particular, I think have been powerful for me. And I think the important thing for your male listeners is that a relationship with another man is powerful, powerful. When you can be really raw and vulnerable with another man, I don't think there's anything else like that.
That's
but too often men don't do that, and we're too willing to substitute that male relationship with flirting and other things with women.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's so easy to default into that like lone wolf kind of mode that you mentioned.
Yeah.
You know, all of a sudden it's me against the world and I got to prove myself to do this. And if I don't do it on my own, then it doesn't count.
Yes.
And that is just
great point.
No. Man, that's probably about the heaviest burden that I think you could carry.
Yeah. And I bet you that's resonating with a lot of the men. Well, women too, but I think I can only relate with men on that part. Right?
Yeah. I so appreciate that. Thank you.
Sure.
What about the Green Berets? I mean, when did you find yourself walking into a recruitment center? How did that happen? What drew you in? And what do you feel like was the most compelling thing that you learned by being there for 9 years?
All right. I'm going to share And I rarely do that. I can maybe once publicly I've done this before. I'm going to share with you the real story.
Okay. We love the real story.
and the public story. The public story I tell is that, and there is some truth to this, uh-huh. but there's a backstory on it. I was at a martial arts tournament in California back in, I think it was 1982. My twin brother and I were at a martial arts tournament out in San Jose. We were from rural New York. And I'd heard a rumor that the Army was going to be sponsoring the first Taekwondo team for the Olympics in 1984. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to look for a way out of where I was living and my circumstance. And I kind of had, you know, believed in myself quite a bit back then, mm-hmm. More than I probably should have. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even study Taekwondo. I studied a style that looked similar to it, but I thought this was my chance out. And so I went into the recruiter's office and did basically a sales pitch on why I should be on the Army Taekwondo team. And he kind of said, hey, you need to be in the Army to be on the Army Taekwondo team. And so he got me to take the ASVAB, mm-hmm. which is the Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Battery. And I scored quite high on it, or very high on it, actually. And he said, hey, you could even get into Special Forces with this score. Why don't you try out for that? And I didn't know what Special Forces was. And so he explained to me what the Green Berets were. And I thought that was very cool. And so I tried out and did really well and got in. The real story is that I was running. I was on the run. I wanted to get as far away from where I was living mm-hmm. as I could. I wanted to prove that I was the biggest, baddest mofo out there mm-hmm. because of some wounding that had happened to me. Mm-hmm. And I never wanted that to happen again. And so that's really why I went in.
Yeah.
And honestly, it was the best experience of my life.
Yeah.
And so I wouldn't trade it for the world.
What part of New York? Rural New York, you said?
Rural New York. South of Buffalo, right at the Pennsylvania border. Little town. Mm-hmm. Do you? Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I grew up in a little town called Weston's Mills. No stoplights in that town. The big city of 18,000 people was Olean, New York. And Allegheny was next door where St. Bonaventure University mm-hmm. is. And so it's kind of cow country and apple orchards.
Yeah.
Kind of bucolic part of the state, mm-hmm. but very depressed economically. Mm-hmm. I knew I needed to get out.
Yeah.
Wow. Do you feel like your approach to leadership is largely based on your military training, or does that come from somewhere else?
You know, Nick, I think it's kind of a combination. I was in Boy Scouts as well, and I kind of tapped back into a lot of the things that I watched. You know, I guess I'm just an observant person. I'm a high analytic on the Strength Finders scale. And so I'm always looking at other people and what are they doing right? What are they doing wrong? And I remember my father coming home when I was a kid. He was a factory worker. And just knowing that he didn't enjoy his job and hearing the stories he would tell about some of the people that he worked for and with. And I thought, that just doesn't make any sense. And then going through Boy Scouts and learning about inspiration versus motivation and, you know, how to really serve people. That there's something, you know, I think it was Mother Teresa and other people have said this, but there's no higher calling than serving other mm-hmm. people. Yeah. And that you can really get filled up. I've traveled around the world and I've realized, you know, before I've stepped foot in a country, I've kind of shipped to that Western mentality. Oh, I'm here and I'm going to help and I'm going to serve. I'm going to do these great things for these people. But then I realize I get more out of it than I could ever give. Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, when it comes to actually building teams though, Nick, when it comes to getting quote unquote the most out of people, it comes from my training in Special Forces because I just believe that I have a moral obligation because I think I have a gifting in this area. And if you have a gifting, you're morally obligated to share that gift. Mm-hmm. And so mine is seeing potential in people that they had never seen in themselves. And so I think the leadership stuff is just a combination because we're all kind of this, experience stew, right? Mm-hmm. And so when you stir all that together and you take a ladle of this stew and put it into your bowl, it's hard to really determine, you know, what ingredient is really making this thing so tasty.
So true.
Yeah, that is definitely your superpower, by mm-hmm. the way.
You
can definitely, you can tell that basically just in everything that you say. I've had, you know, several conversations with you and you always have that way of picking out that that little something, not always little something, but oftentimes that little something that just really nobody else would necessarily see. Mm. It's really quite extraordinary. Yeah.
Thanks for that. I mean, I needed that today of all days. Uh-huh. I mean, I won't even go into it, but yeah, I do believe that that's a gifting that I am able to read or hear between the lines of what people are saying and what they're not saying. Mm-hmm. And then I just feel like reality is our friend. And so I have to share that when somebody either doesn't say something or they say something I don't feel like is really on the mark, you know, just kind of in a loving, direct and respectful way, kind of bring it to light. Yeah. So thanks for recognizing that.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Kind of coming back to the humility conversation and your experience in the military, I've never had any direct experience with that. I went into the Marine recruiter's office. I was like this close to signing up. And I just decided that I really wanted to be a musician more.
Yeah.
And so that was my story around it. And I never went back. But I've always had a really and truly just an incredible, really like beyond incredible respect for people who have served in the military. I just think it's an extraordinary thing. And what I'm curious about and what I can only imagine is how chaotic those environments can become for you and how humbling that must be. And so I wonder, like, I just kind of wonder just out, really more out of curiosity is like, how does that, you know, do you feel like that's influenced that sense of humility that really stays with you throughout?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. When you realize that there are brothers and sisters to your right, left, and at your six, they say, you know, behind you, you know, who have got your back, and they're willing to do that to the death. Mm-hmm. How many people actually have that in their life? With the exception of maybe people like you guys, right? Some where you're really totally committed life partners, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I know marriages, frankly, where you know they don't really have each other's back, you know? I mean, how many times do you see relationships where they actually belittle each other? They tear each other down instead of building each other up.
Yeah.
It hurts, right? To even see that. But in the military, Nick, when you know that people are willing to do that, it's powerful. It is life-changing, and there's nothing like it, and it's hard to ever get that out of your head because I remember when I first got out of the military, I longed to go back in because I just, you know, I knew that I needed to get out because I felt like God, the world, the universe had bigger plans for me, that I could impact more people, I could make a more positive impact on the world outside the military than in the military. But I longed for that camaraderie, knowing that somebody had my back. I just, I really longed for it. And so because of that, when you know that people are willing to sacrifice for you, for me, really for me, you're willing to do that. It's humbling. And frankly, at least in Special Forces, and that's all I can speak to, the only, you know, unit I ever served in was in Special Forces. If you got too big for your britches, there was somebody there to knock you down.
Kind of got your karmic smackdown, yeah, right?
Exactly. And I think that we all need that in life sometimes because there was a time in my life when I started this company. I was in San Francisco for about 14 years and a partner in another hotel company up there before I started this one. And I started believing my own stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I was getting a little too big for my own britches and I didn't have a mentor and I was not in a mastermind and I, you know, didn't have a board of advisors. And then the recession in 2001 hit and it was that kind of one of the things that, that brought me back to earth.
Right. Wow.
I needed that.
Well, tell us then your company now. This is, so you were with another hotel company, 2001 hit. Then when did the creation of what I watch your posts. I'm looking at all these cool places you're going. Mm. I know you're so proud of it. And I love how you talk about your team and the staff and just share a bit about Broughton Hotels.
All right. So I started the company in 2001, not the greatest time to be starting a hotel company because at that point, that recession that hit in 2001 was the deepest recession we'd had since World War II. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we had the dot-com bomb and national recession and SARS. I don't know if you guys remember the avian flu.
I was in Hong Kong for SARS.
Oh, well, there you go. There you go.
Yeah.
And at that time, all of my investments were wrapped up in my former company. And all those hotels were in San Francisco, where a third of that market was from the Pacific Rim. And so our values of all of our hotels dropped by about 45%. And I was trying to launch this company down here. And then 9/11 hit. Right. So it was a tough time to be launching a new hotel company. But I really got focused on building really lean teams and doing projects that were fun. And I felt like I wanted to create an organization that built people up, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm going to kill this quote, but Herb Kelleher, the former chairman of founder of Southwest, said something like, you know, we get it all wrong. We've got it backwards. We tend to use people and manage resources, but should be the other way around. Oh, right?
Yeah, right.
And so I thought, that's powerful. And so I'm going to really try to build people up, because I read years ago the State of the American Workforce Survey by the Gallup organization, and they found, and they do it every year, and it tends not to shift very much, mm-hmm. that about 67% of the American workforce is disengaged or actively disengaged. Mm. And what they found is the reason is that people aren't developed. They're not working in their strengths. Mm. And when people aren't working in their strengths, life feels like a grind.
Right.
And they take it home and they're frustrated. And so I said, well, gosh, I want to build an organization that's a little bit different, where people enjoy where they work, where sparks fly when they're working with their team members, and, you know, and they have a ball. Now, we miss it. You know, we don't get it right every day, but at least that's what we aspire to be. And the people around here know that. And so I kind of skipped over this. So we're a hotel company. Mm-hmm. We have about 20 hotels in the portfolio in various stages of acquisition, or we're currently owning or operating. Most of them are boutique hotels, lifestyle hotels. I think mm-hmm. people know what that term is nowadays. Mm-hmm. Most of them are in California. We have three in Chicago, but we've got, you know, pretty big, hairy, audacious goals of growing nationwide over the next several years. And so we're looking in markets like Austin and Boston and New York and Atlanta. Yeah. So we're looking to have some fun along the way and offer people opportunity to grow.
I think you're going to be getting some applications from Aspira. I mean, it's just, you know, to be able to have a vibrant culture, you know, work culture for people. That's when it's like the entire business is like this wheel, and all the spokes mm-hmm. are in line and they're healthy and everything is, that's beautiful. I love that.
It's really quite a shocking number, 67%. It's kind of mind-boggling.
That people are disengaged, that it?
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, well, think about this. Now, for those who don't know what disengaged is, so they're disengaged or actively disengaged. So disengaged is somebody who comes in and it's Monday and they say, oh, can't wait for Friday. Or, hey, when's payday, boss? Or, hey, when can I, you know, take my vacation? Those are people who are disengaged. Actively disengaged, it's like 20-some percent, 27% I think it is. And these are people who self-select, say, hey, yeah, I'm stealing from the company. I'm running my own business, but using my employer's equipment, technology, whatever. Mm. People who are selling secrets, you know, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. That's a disgusting number. Now, but the good news is that it's much better than the world, because they do a state of the world workforce as well, or global workforce uh-huh. as well. And the numbers are much worse than here in the U.S.
Oh, my gosh.
But I think of it this way. As the CEO of the organization, I've got an obligation, a moral obligation mm-hmm. for the people that are on my team, that are in my sphere of influence, because I'm not just providing them a paycheck. I'm providing rent money. I'm providing tuition money. I'm providing money for people to put the food in their mouth. I don't know. I just – this is so – crunchy granola for some of my special forces brothers, but you know, there's energy that I put out there. And if it's gross, then that impacts every person that's in that long tail. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe I'm getting too airy fairy.
No, but anyway. I mean, it's absolutely, you're speaking our language. I mean, your energy, right? The frequency is like, as you elevate your frequency, that's what you're attracting into your company, and you're giving, I mean, our teacher in India always says the highest form of service is to seek self-realization. Now, maybe a lot of us aren't really seeking that, but it's like point in that direction. And as you point in that direction, you're lifting up everybody around you. Or they decide, not my gig, and I'm going to go. And that's okay, too.
Well, I think that that's so key, because, you know, so many of us want to be more wise, right? I mean, when it comes down to it, as leaders, I think, in particular. But without self-realization, you're never going to be wise.
That's right.
it's just not going to happen. So we think that by reading a book or going to another seminar that we're going to become wise. No. Doing does not create wisdom. I mean, I'm sorry, doing does create wisdom, not learning.
Exactly. You know, you have to integrate. You have to integrate to create the wisdom. Spot on. Couldn't agree more. Yeah, I love that. Well, so do you see yourself with your hotel company for the rest of your life, or do you have goals to sell it, or you're like, who knows? Let's see.
Who knows? Who knows? I know that I'll be in the hotel industry the rest of my life because it's just, there's so many elements of it that just spark my, you know, I just get a lot of energy from. You know, I do know that there's been a project I've had in my, back pocket and on the burner for years that I shared with a few people, and it's called The Giving Hotel. And the idea is that all the profits from the hotel go to serving third world and developing countries for entrepreneurship, women's education, and water, clean water. I think that the big issue in the world right now is water. Mm-hmm. It's not nuclear problems. It's not warring factions. It's the control of water and clean water, that is. And I don't think that, you know, if we don't have education for women are really, you know, the Dalai Lama said it's Western women, they're going to save the world.
Right.
I think that we have to have women in entrepreneurship and leadership positions throughout the world.
I agree.
And so the idea is that we would have about 10 of these hotels around the world. And so let's say that I've got a hotel in Los Angeles that's going to be benefiting these issues in Indonesia. All right. Well, all of the art, food, decor, design, music would be influenced by Indonesia.
I love that.
And so if people go there, all that those profits would go to these programs in Indonesia. And so there might be one, you know, in London that serves Zimbabwe, for instance. Mm-hmm. So I've shared that with a couple of people. A couple of people are trying to run with that idea now to start their own company, but that's kind of the goal.
Yeah,
so I may have this company and do that or just that, I don't know. But I do know that I want to up my game when it comes to serving humanity.
That brings up a really, really cool conversation. And I'm curious how, because it's not something that you hear a lot about, is like giving in business. I think it's kind of like it's sort of there on the undercurrent sometimes, but to meet somebody like yourself who's actively seeking a way to do that bigger and bigger is one, amazing. And two is I'm curious, like philosophically, kind of how you see that working in business. Like, what is the role of giving and tithing in business? How does that serve prosperity?
Well, I think, Nick, that more of it happens than we realize. I know entrepreneurs and business owners who give away literally tens of millions of dollars a year and who do it quietly. I think that the media and movies and books have made capitalists look like the evil bad guys. But if you think about a lot of these nonprofits around the country, they are funded by a lot of these capitalists.
Yes.
I think that we call it conscious capitalism, right? I mean, I do think that it's on the rise, but I don't know if it's the Protestant work ethic or whatever it was, but there are a lot of people who, like I'm about to say, I'm 54. A lot of my contemporaries and people, business owners that are older than me, they give away millions of dollars a year and never say anything about it because they think, well, they believe that they shouldn't be braggadocious about this.
Yeah.
You know, that there's something you do privately. I think it's kind of the younger generation of folks that are out there who are doing it much more publicly. And there's not a right or wrong about it. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you this. One of the things that we do in our organization that I've gotten a lot of blowback on is once a month we stop what we're doing in this office. And even if I've got clients here that I'm meeting with, we stop and we make sack lunches make about 150 to 160 sack lunches that we then give to Orangethorpe Children's Home and, you know, a couple other homes around Orange County. And I used to be very quiet about that, did that quietly for years. And then I realized, you know, when I would like have a private conversation with somebody, they'd say, oh, that is so cool. Mm-hmm. And so once social media started taking off, I would post pictures once in a while about it. And some people say, what are you doing? You know, you're so braggadocious about this. Look at you trying to get attention for it. And I had to like brush it off and say, no, what I'm doing is trying to encourage other business owners to show that for $200, you can serve 160 meals to people, you know? And I've had, I have had a lot of people who say, hey, thanks for the inspiration. I want to do that in my company too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Social media needs more of those posts.
Oh, good. I agree.
Totally.
I agree.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
But there are people, you know, we just all have to be aware of this, that when you do give, when you do serve, I think there's always going to be sharpshooters out there who are questioning your motives.
Exactly. Well, that's because so they're questioning, they're questioning their own motives or lack thereof. So,
sure. But I think that has inhibited though, or prohibited people from going public about the millions of dollars that are given away, given away each year.
I think people should talk.
Yeah. I do too. I think that there are more organizations, Nick, that are doing this. You know, Tom's Shoes comes to mind, you know, right away. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of people that are kind of doing this. But I think just by being a capitalist, not a pure capitalist where you exploit people, but those that serve their communities by creating jobs, I think that's a great way. It's, there's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with that.
I think it's one of the most beautiful things and really one of the greatest, you know, one of the greatest acts, because you can actually leverage your people and your business to give in a bigger way. Like, I don't know. I'll be honest. I teared up a little bit when you were talking about making the sack lunches. I'm like, that is such a beautiful, like that is so amazing. And I've done that before. I don't know if I can quite put words on it of how it just really changes your perspective than to go take those sack lunches and to go find somebody who really needs it to put it in their hands is like extremely humbling. You know, you don't even always know who's really in need because they have a way about them that is, is like, oh no, I've got it. When in fact they take that lunch and they're so grateful. I can't tell you what that felt like for me, but I just think that's so cool.
Well, let me just encourage people to do something like that then, because I'm glad that resonated with you. So the 160 that we do is just here with a few people that are here in our home office, but we try to do this around all the hotels every month, right? And they to serve the community that they're in. Then every year we like, we'll in Chicago, our three hotels get together and do it there. And then we get everybody on the, in our LA hotels, they go to Sportsman's Lodge, which is one of our hotels. And then we do thousands of meals, you know, where we get sponsors to come in and do this. And so just, I would say, if you're a business owner or you're a business leader, can't you do something like that?
Yeah.
You know, just to serve people, just to serve. And I think that what we're doing is we're putting that energy and that vibration out there to the world. And you're showing our team members,
right?
That it's these small acts that can go along
completely
way. Because sometimes,
I mean, you never know whose stomach you're feeding that needed that much nourishment to actually get an idea and take the next step in whatever direction they're going, you know, forward.
And it goes beyond that, because sometimes the way to someone's soul is through their stomach.
Right.
I'm just saying, you know, because sometimes people are so down because to think that, I mean, I've had people break down. I've put something like this in their hands. They just break down in tears saying, oh my gosh, no one has done this for me before. You know, that they know that somebody cares about them that much that they're willing to fight another day. Yes, I know.
That is something that we need right now for sure. Thank you for sharing that. I wanted to ask real quickly.
Sure.
You have some sort of morning routine that you do. Is that correct? Because I watch you and I'm like, look what Larry just posted. This is so cool. And so I know someone like you cannot start your day with an automatic tweet and CNN and Facebook. Like there's something that happens before you enter the real world. Is that correct?
It's some sort of routine. That's for sure. Yes, that is correct. And let me preface that. I do think it's pretty powerful, but let me say this just to give some background. In the old days, like several years ago, I used to carry with me everywhere I went this orange to-do list. And I was constantly writing things down on it. And if we went to dinner, it would sit there next to my plate or underneath my leg, and I'd pull it out as things came to me. It would sit on my bedstand. Mm-hmm. You know, when my wife and I were married, my nightstand. And as I woke up in the middle of the night, I'd write ideas down on it. So I was training my brain to constantly be working. Mm-hmm. And my mentor said that is the wrong thing to be doing. You know, he taught me about how the way the brain works. The brain needs rest at night when you're sleeping. That's when the brain is doing all the filing of all the millions of bits of data that it took in during the day. Well, what I used to do, I'd get up when my eyes would pop open in the morning, I was already at work because I've been training my brain all night. You're working. And so when you're married and, you know, in the morning, wouldn't it be nice to roll over and give your wife a kiss or your husband a kiss in the morning instead of I'm at work? So my energy was there, you know, and I would get up and I would check email and check social media and all that garbage. Right. And wondered why when I got in my car, I was uptight and trying to drive people off the road and the bad days flipping people off and saying bad things to them. Right. And wondered why I was grouchy all day. Well, it took some time to realize, and my mentor, Daryl, helped me with this, to say, you got to start your day with intentionality. You got to start looking for the little miracles throughout the day. And I said, I don't have time to be doing reading and prayers and meditation and all that kind of stuff. I'm busy. I'm a CEO. I'm building an empire. He's like, dude, you've got 7 minutes. If you can't afford 7 minutes in the morning. And so we worked out this little 7-minute routine, where it was brief meditations, a little bit of reading, and some mantras. And so before I check email, before I check, you know, turn on the news, it's what I do. I read an entry from the Daily Word. I read something from Emmett Fox around the year with Emmett Fox. I read a passage from my book, Flashpoints for Achievers. I write my intentionalities down for the day. Like, I'm going to look for little miracles today. I'm going to help the barista or somebody hold the door at Starbucks. Or if I see a woman in the parking lot at Albertsons, I'm going to help her with her groceries. Those are little things. And all of a sudden I started realizing that my temperature dropped, you know, my blood pressure came down. I smiled more. And something powerful happens when you start smiling at people. They smile back. Isn't oh my gosh. Amazing. Powerful, right? So anyway, I started doing that at night as well. I just used to go through, I'd do a gratitude journal at night so that, you know, studies have shown you wake up the way you go to bed.
Yes.
And so if I'm putting negative stuff in my brain, like watching the news before I go to bed, well, that's what my brain is going to be processing all night. But if I go through all the beautiful people and all the beautiful things I saw during the day that I'm grateful for, then that's how I wake up in the morning. And so that's kind of the loop that I do.
I love that. That is exquisite. Yeah. That is really amazing. Thank you for sharing that. 7 minutes, everyone. 7 minutes is not too long. That's pretty cool. Yeah. We love to ask our guests this one question. But before I do that, I want to know from you, is there anything you want to share with our listeners or something important going on, a book? I mean, you've got your Flashpoints, right? That book?
Yeah. Yeah, I got a book called Flashpoints for Achievers. It's really powerful for people. I've got a CD that's been really powerful called It's Revealed, 8 Mission Tested Strategies for Leadership in Life. And if you just go to larrybroughton.me, then they can get both of those are free. You don't have to buy them. I just want to just give them out to people.
Oh, that's so great.
So there's that kind of stuff. I mean, if there's something I wanted to share with people, that would be, stop chasing success, for crying out loud. I use that word because people get it, but I just beg people to live a life of significance. You know, serve your community, serve your family, serve your place of worship. And success is the byproduct of a life of significance. But don't chase success. It's just empty. It's hollow, and it'll drive your life right off a cliff.
That's in the Train of Truth. Just went by. Perfect timing with those words. I love that. You know, it's true. What we chase keeps running from us.
Yeah.
And just grounding that in significance that changes everything. It's a completely different vibe. Well, the question I love to ask our guests is there anything that secretly you really want to do and you've not yet done and you haven't told anybody about it?
Oh my gosh. Secretly. You know, I guess I'm an adrenaline junkie at heart. And I kind of dialed that back when I had kids, but all kinds of things. You know, I'd love to climb Mount Everest. I'd love to go shark diving. I've got a whole bucket list of like adventure types of things. I would love to get a couple of people, and we each have our own little planes and fly around the world for a year.
Oh, dude, I hope you do that. That's amazing.
So cool. Wouldn't that be cool? And just have little, you know, little landing strips that we could stop off at everywhere around the world.
I hope this manifestation, I know this manifestation will come to fruition. That's gorgeous. Yeah,
I think so too.
That is so great. Well, gosh, Larry, thank you so much for sharing. This has been just full of rich advice and vulnerability and authenticity, like all of, you know, you, I just want to say to our listeners, Larry is who he is. Like, I love that about you. You're very strong. You're very direct, but very compassionate, and that you just don't put any airs about you. It's just very truthful. Mm. So thank you for that.
Thank you. It's been a blessing to be with you guys. Thank you.
What a pleasure. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much, Larry.
All righty. Thanks, guys.
Mm-hmm. Namaste.
Namaste.